Charles Wolfe was of German descent, the son of Paul and Augusta Wolfe. His mother died when he was 3 years old. He had an older brother, Ignaz. His father remarried, and to this union, three sons were born. Casper, Henry, didn't know the other one's name. He was raised mostly by his grandmother, named Zita, whom he loved very dearly because of her devotion to him. His stepmother was mean to her stepchildren. Both Ignaz and Casper came to the United States. My grandfather, Charles Wolfe, left Germany between the age of 17 and 18 to avoid military training. So it isn't any different, is it?
No, it is.
He came to New York City, where he had a relative, I believe. He worked there doing any labor possible for some time, but as soon as possible worked his way westward. When coming to Colorado, he came to a distant relative, the Fred Dietzes and Bex. Does those names sound familiar to you?
Yes, they do.
Where he worked and learned the ways of the West, farming and so forth. He homesteaded a place on Rough Creek, 11 miles west of Gardner, and lived there thatching for a number of years.
Now, I have to have one of the spelled Rough Creek because it's B-R-U-F-F.
Right. Uh-huh. That's right.
The first time I saw that, I thought it was a typing error.
Uh-huh. No, it's Rough. B-R-U-F-F.
It must be a family.
I just think it is, uh-huh.
They call it Buff Creek. It's rough is the way it's spelled.
Spelled. In the late 1800s, he was married to Effie Hughes of Shellsburg, Iowa. To this union was born five children. Isaac passed away in infancy. Paul, who was my father, Zita, Lida, and Dorothy. Dorothy also passed away when she was born. He and wife took into their home a niece, Elsie, and nephew, Charles Ribble, from Shellsburg, Iowa, whose mother passed away when each child was 16 years old. That's wrong. This is, my aunt wrote this, and her punctuation isn't just exactly where it should be, so I made an error there. When each child was 16 years of age, they passed away. Elsie from ruptured appendix, and Charles from tubercular meningitis. Charles Wolfe and Emil Schmidt, and owners of the J.M. Ranch, lawsuited many years with the San Luis Valley over water in the Mattanoa. And it was quite a chore. Every spring they had to clean this ditch out, and it was really a big job.
Yes, all of us. A lot of times.
After many years and many dollars, the lawsuit was won and water was brought across the Mattanoa to irrigate on the ranches. For years and years, water was hauled from a wonderful soft water spring 1.5 miles west of the ranch house, but finally was told by a surveyor it was possible to pipe the water to the house and barnyard. Galvanized pipe was used, and Charles Wolfe hauled it by wagon to the ranch from Walsenburg, which was 45 miles.
Oh my goodness.
That's a long ways, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And this was the pipe.
This was the pipe to pipe the water from the spring to the ranch house. In handling the pipe, he contracted erysipelas. This was my grandfather. After being doctored at home by a doctor from Walsenburg, he was taken to Corwin Hospital, which is now St. Mary, Corwin, where he was near death for some time. It's a bad disease, really bad. Every year until his death, he had a very bad sick spell every spring after he had this erysipelas. He passed away November 18, 1932, after having pneumonia. He was buried in the Gardner Cemetery. His wife passed away on December 15, 1951, in Walsenburg, where she lived after a short stay at the ranch when it was turned over to son Paul. Paul passed away in 1971 and daughter Lida in 1976. My grandfather, Mr. Wolf, was born in Holland, Koller, Germany. He was a highly respected man, friend to everyone, and a very hard worker, and always helped the less fortunate. His brother, Ignaz, who worked in a butcher shop in some town in New York, and I just can't make it out, contracted tuberculosis, and my father brought him to Colorado hoping he would be benefited. But after about 3 years, he passed away and is also buried in the Gardner Cemetery. So that's the history on my grandfather.
How interesting. Notes said that your grandmother came from Iowa. Did he go back to Iowa to find her? How did they meet?
Well, the story is that she was a mail order bride.
Oh my goodness.
And he advertised, and this is how he met my grandmother.
And I would assume the marriage was reasonably happy.
It evidently was, because they lived together and
five children.
Five children.
And your father was
Paul.
Now, had your grandfather been involved in farming in Germany? I'm not familiar with the Holland Color area of Germany. I don't know.
I'm not either, Debbie. I don't know. Because he left when he was 17, so I really don't know much about his. No,
he couldn't.
Right.
Why did he come west? It always intrigues me.
The only reason I know is because to avoid the military service. But I don't know what drew all these people to the west.
This is so intriguing to me, because at that time, if you could do anything, there was money to be made in the cities, I think. Mm-hmm. But perhaps there were just so many people around.
Don't you think it was a goal?
Well, I don't think it would have to do that.
And go
that's
west.
What I was thinking.
Young man, go west.
Oh, it's really famous statement.
Right.
Now, the ranch remaining in your family plans for quite a while.
Yes, it did.
Now, is this on your father?
This is on my father.
Great.
Paul Wolf, my father, was born on the ranch home on Rough Creek on November 12, 1901. He was reared on this ranch, which was originally homesteaded by his father, Charles, in 1892. He was married to Josephine Kiesler of Westcliff, Colorado, October 19, 1925. To this union was born seven children: Catherine Benson, Georgia Hughes, Charlotte Rogers, deceased July 20, 1965, Marjorie Riggins, Betty Jo Cooper, Charles, and Paul Jr. Paul was a highly respected and prominent rancher who took great pride in his cattle and ranch holdings, a hard worker and friend to all, always ready to lend a helping hand. And I think Bud can tell you the ranch was a hunter's paradise.
Yeah, they used to go and hunt all the time, you know. Lots of deer there. Oh, there's a deer every place, but the last few years, you know, there hasn't been hardly. No, there hasn't. No. But there was no elk down there then. You know, now there's elk all around there.
Well, yeah, this is true. They've moved down the range, haven't they?
That's right.
Yeah. They used to come into the fields by the hundreds and destroy the haystacks. And
they were really to the point of being a detriment.
Right.
They?
Yes.
They really were.
I'm sorry, but I just have to stop here. This really interests me. What were they able to do? Did you always have, when did you begin to have a license for deer?
I was a kid.
Remember.
And used to have to be 18 years old to buy a license.
I see.
And I know I bought one every year from the time I was old enough to hunt, you know. So I don't know how long before that did.
And was there any government recompense when they would communicate on the haystacks or anything?
Well, they would, you know, if
I they think one year, in. Didn't they? It seems like one year there they...
For my uncle to live right west there, Albert Schmidt, you know, Fish and Game used to pay him for alfalfa that they'd eat up in the spring of the year, and haystacks they'd get into. But I don't think your dad ever put in for any
damage. I don't think he did. I don't remember that he did.
It was just an example.
That's right.
That's right. But you'd go in the fields and all, but you just can't imagine. It just looked like the hillside was moving with deer.
Well, I really can't imagine that. I've seen her at over 50.
We brought a bunch of Cub Scouts from Walsenburg up to my dad's ranch one Sunday, and they branded, and the kids got to help with the branding.
Oh, how exciting.
And, oh, they had a ball. And then afterwards, we took them up in one of these fields and let them see the deer. And you should have heard the oohs and ahs, because the hillside just looked like it was just moving, you know. There was so many deer. And, of course, they went home and told their fathers about all the deer they'd seen.
Oh, well, yeah. So
you can imagine they thought, oh, gee, if we can just go there.
Right.
Another thing we had was a lot of jackrabbits that came into the fields.
Oh, really?
So one of the greatest sports was going out at night with a spotlight and shooting these jackrabbits. And it was nothing for somebody to fall off the fender of the car and pick up. But it was great fun, you know.
Oh.
And then my dad raised pigs, and so then they feed these jackrabbits to the pigs.
Oh, really? That doesn't seem quite what I'm used to hearing in the pig's eyes.
They seem to enjoy the jackrabbits. At least we got rid of a lot of the jackrabbits.
Oh, okay. And that was what we should do.
That was great entertainment, you know, for the family and all the hired hands.
Oh, I'll bet so.
In 1959, the ranch was sold to the Level Cattle Company of El Paso, Texas. $1 million ranch land and cattle investment, which included the J.M. Ranch, which was formerly owned by John Meyer, the Juan Pacheco Ranch, Wolf Ranch, and the Hilario Cerda Ranch. The sellers were Hugo Rutherford, owner of the J.M. Ranch, Joe Rounceville, owner of the Juan Pacheco Ranch, and he also owned the Billy Gerritsen Ranch, the Charles and Albert Schmidt Ranch, and the Jess Roach Ranch.
My goodness. What was his name again?
Joe Rounceville.
Where was he from?
He was from Pecos, Texas. The Andrew Tillmans, owner of Cerda Place, and Paul Wolf. The transaction involved 45,000 acres in three counties, Wharfno, Custer, and Siwatch. And according to the attorneys who handled the transaction, abstracts covering the property showed hundreds of former owners of smaller tracts within this combined unit.
Okay, so have you ever read the abstracts on it?
No, I never have. But I know when I was a teenager, there was families scattered all out through these ranches. There was just, I can remember, probably 25 or 30 families that lived on these ranches, and just little.
There's a lot of old, you know, just old cabins down there now.
Sure.
You know, just about ready to fall down, or something has fell down. So those people used to live.
This would really be something to have a map made of those original homesteads.
Yes,
and know just how many people actually homesteaded.
Keith and I have been talking about doing that up here in the valley.
That would be good. Mm-hmm. They've torn down, you know, so many of these. So now, anybody that goes there now would never know there was anybody that ever lived there.
But I would assume the original abstracts are on file somewhere.
Yes, I'm sure in Walsenburg.
Yeah.
Yes.
And if you talk to Jeanette Thatch.
Yes, I'm going to. I did not get her a note written yet, but I'm going to. And Mrs. Meyer said I must.
Yes, she's very good. And their real estate office handled a lot of the sales of these ranches.
Oh, I see.
So she could give you a lot of history, and I'm sure you could see the abstracts, and it would really be interesting. Oh, yes.
It took a long time.
You've got a job ahead of you, Debbie.
Oh. Maybe you have to divide us into segments. I don't know.
The history of the ranches dates back almost 100 years and involves transfer of the first Intermountain water diversion in Colorado in 1886, diverting water from the Hudson Branch of Badenoch Creek near the Sand Dunes Monument into the watershed of Muddy Creek on the east slope of the Sangre de Cristo Range. Diversion of the water resulted in a lengthy court battle between John Meyer, original owner of the Rutherford Ranch, known for many years as the J.M. Ranch, and the owners of the Badenoch Springs Ranch near the sand dunes. In 1904, a consent decree was entered in district court in Alamosa, guaranteeing the rights of the J.M. and Wolf Ranches to divert 15 cubic feet of water per second to the Muddy and Rough Creek watersheds during certain seasons of the year. Charles Wolf, father of Paul, joined Meyer in the lengthy court battle. This was when they got the water over the Madnock. So it was quite a lengthy battle. And I'm sure there was probably some enemies, you know, water always brings hard feelings.
That would be an understatement. Especially when two prominent ranchers in the valley had water from the other side of the mountain.
Right.
Yes. What prompted them to bring the water over the mountain? Was it really that short? It must have been.
Yes.
To entail that expense.
The ranches down there wouldn't have been any good if they didn't have that water.
Oh, I see.
For Buff Creek, don't. Spring, it runs a little, but it doesn't run very
long. Not through the summer.
No.
See, they used this water to irrigate these ranches.
Uh-huh.
And without bringing this water over the Madnon,
they would have been totally dry. Now, does it still come over? When the Levels bought all this land, did they buy also the right to
the water? Yes, they bought all the water rights.
I see.
But I don't think they're irrigating, if they are, not very much.
Well. I guess maybe we just better say no comment on that.
That's better.
I think so, too.
I'll take that part out of the tape.
Yeah.
Can I say something? I have to think of that.
I think your eyes got a better thing than mine did.
I hope that's off.
No, it's running, but that's all right. I'll erase it.
Okay.
But you know, really, 15 cubic feet used in the right places and carried right is a lot of water.
Yes, it is. Afterwards.
Okay. Now, this is unfortunate because some of the interesting stuff, there are still people alive who would be important if we talked about them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think I'm going to use that as my introduction maybe to this tape.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, go ahead.
In 1970, the ranch sold to James W. Hyde and Harold F. Vessels of Englewood and Associates. The addition of several other ownerships had been added to the holdings, including the Porter and Winter Ranch, largely in Custer County, the old Harry Vandenberg Ranch, and Rex Schnatterly Land are included in the Custer County portion of the ranch, as well as part of the Jim Wilburn Ranch acquired from Anthony Pondo. This transaction involved 56,000 acres at a price reported to be just under $2.5 million.
My word.
Lots of money.
Yes, it is.
My father moved to Rye in 1960 after selling his ranch to Level. He owned a small ranch there and operated it until his death on April 3, 1971. Mother sold the ranch to Dr. Calvin Hunter and moved to Pueblo, where she now resides at 2807 Royal Avenue.
What a beautifully concise history of your family. Ranch was pretty large and pretty prominent in that area. What was it like growing up on that kind of a ranch?
Well, lots of fun and lots of hard work and good times. I used to help my dad ride all the time. I was this cowgirl until I got married. Always worked in the hay field. I started out as a, we called it a stacker team driver.
I found out all about that this afternoon at Miss Bell's house.
And I graduated from that and I was put on a sulky rake. And then I graduated from that to the buck rake. And that's how we put up our hay. And I even helped my dad stack hay once in a while.
Did you?
It was fun, but it was sure lots of hard
work.
What
about your friends? Did you have lots of friends over?
Yes. Well, we didn't have too many close neighbors. They didn't have too many children, but we'd get together and have weenie roasts and things like that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a lot of things to entertain us in those days.
You know, part of the reason I'm doing this is, well, as I said before, for people who are never going to know anything about Mackinac Country personally, you know, and they can read Louis L'Amour's books, but he doesn't get quite new enough.
Yeah, that's right.
And one thing I find is that, well, people a generation before you, your folks' age, for example, you know, their socializing was box socials for the school or thrashing up here in the fall or Roundup, and I'll bet you guys have Roundup. Do you remember Roundup as a
Roundup,
girl?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, how long did you ship your cattle out from Tioga?
I remember it out, for sure. Yeah.
You said Tioga was a coal mining town?
Yes.
Yes.
And when did the mines open up there?
I don't know.
I don't
year.
Know where it would be.
I sure don't know, Debbie.
Hmm. Evidently quite a while ago. Would it have been before the turn of the century, do you think? Is it that old?
Yes.
I bet it is.
Yes, I'm
really?
Sure.
Oh, gosh.
Because I was born at Maitland, Colorado, a little coal mining town.
Where is Maitland?
It's on beyond Tioga.
But in
it's
the area?
It's in the area, yes. Just several miles from Tioga.
Mm-hmm.
I was born at the home of my aunt.
Oh, I see.
Delivered by the town, or the Tioga doctor.
Oh!
Dr. Fowler, who was the doctor at Tioga at that time.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. You know, so many people, I don't think, have ever asked their mothers about how they got here.
Right.
Their mothers just didn't want to remember.
That could be.
Oh. I see one of your clippings here says the town of Gardner developed from an early stage station. That sounds interesting.
Yes, this article was written by Lyda Meyer in 1959.
Now, she would be related to one of you, am I correct?
She would be Zula Meyer.
Sister-in-law.
Sister-in-law.
All right, is she still alive?
No,
no.
She's not.
Okay, because I know Zula and two of her sister-in-laws make up three of several, but there's Zula and two more who are still alive, and they're all over 90.
Ethel.
Ethel is one.
She's in the nursing home in Trinidad.
Yeah.
I don't know who the other one is.
One is in Denver.
Oh,
oh, that's Albert Myers.
Okay.
Wife.
I bet it is.
I thought that was really unique, because she said none of them, none of the three ladies were in any way related, and they're all over 90, all married to Meyer brothers.
That's who it would be.
Yes, yeah, something. Debbie, I thought you might like to hear about the Spanish holiday.
Oh, this
that
is
they used to have
day.
In the garden, yes.
Yes, and that's spelled G-A-L-L-O.
That's right.
Okay.
In the early days of Gardner, the Spanish people held a two-day holiday known as Gallo Day, meaning the day of the cock or rooster. The first day, July 25th, was the real Gallo Day. The proper name for the day was St. James Day. It came to be called Gallo Day because on that day they would bury a rooster in the sand with only its head sticking out. Can you imagine?
Not really. That sounds awfully cruel.
The men would race on their horses, leaning from their saddles, to try to grab the rooster. And when one did get the rooster, the others would chase after him.
Oh!
The next day, the 26th, known as St. Anna's Day, the women would try their skill at the same rooster grabbing. But in later years, the State Humane Society put a stop to the event. After that, gunny sacks instead of roosters were used.
Took all the fun away, didn't it?
Right. On both days, they had horse races, dancing, and other activities. During recent years, there has been no celebration on these days. Now, I vaguely remember the celebrations in Gardner, but I was pretty young then, so I don't remember too much about that.
A little, but not too much. We never did, I remember these type of rodeos down there, but yeah. The guy day, we never did go to that too much.
That was pretty much strictly a Spanish song.
It was, yes.
Yes.
And we never went to that.
Mm-hmm. Was there high feeling between the Spanish people and white people as there were in so many areas?
Yes, there really was.
Was
there? They were friends, yet they weren't friends.
You didn't actually socialize with each other?
No. No, we didn't. They went their way and
yeah.
Rest of the people went their way.
There must have been quite a few of them, though, to have this kind of gathering. It sounds like it would entail.
There was.
Yes,
yeah,
there was always a lot of Spanish people. Gardner.
Mm-hmm. What brought them here?
Well, a lot of them had little ranch, you know.
They had little ranches.
Little ranches in up and down the wharf, you know. And that's really what brought them there. Mm-hmm. There's no mining.
I didn't think there was, but I wasn't sure. Oh, that's interesting.
Just branching.
This article might tell something, Debbie. You're more than welcome to read it.
Oh, that would be so great.
It was written by Lyda Meyer in 1959, and it tells about the first school in Gardner.
Oh, this would be interesting.
And about a doctor that arrived there. And an epidemic that hit the Gardner area. And then a bad flood they had in 1911. So I'm sure you'd enjoy reading this article.
Oh, yes. You know, that 1911 flood was either the same year or the year before when the reservoir broke up here on what we call the hill.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
That's when the reservoir over at Heddy Wharfman broke, with one they called Goose Lake.
Oh, was it?
I'm pretty sure it was that.
Well, this one, if I remember correctly, broke in fall?
October of 1911, when there was a cloudburst in the Sierra Blanca Mountains and a heavy rain that continued for several days.
All right, this is when the flood happened here in the valley. And I wonder, now the watersheds are different. Both the two would not have been connected because all the water here would have run eventually north.
Yes, it would have
got turned around. Yeah.
This article says it washed out two large reservoirs at the head of the Wharfno, releasing all the stored water, which then rushed down the Wharfno, causing damage in the valley estimated at $500,000.
My word, in 1911,
that was
a terrible amount of money.
I didn't know it was terrible. I knew the one that's called Goose Lake.
Yeah. Well, Bud, tell me about your family. I want to hear about working on the JF, too.
Well, David, I really don't know too much about my family. I've only got, to see, one uncle left. Well, two uncles, but one lives out in Europe. You know, he was in California, but now he's in
Oregon,
isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll check with this one uncle, see if maybe he can get us, some information on, like my granddad and grandmother and that, Now, my mother's side, in this one article where it says Emil Schmidt,
Yeah.
Well, that was my granddad.
Oh, I see. Your mom was a Schmidt.
Yes, she was Schmidt. And they owned the place it's about 4 miles west of where Paul Wolf lived.
Oh.
See, they had a ranch up there. And then they homesteaded that, and then after they left, well, my Uncle Albert Smith, he ran it for, well, he owned it for, I don't know how many years, till he retired. You remember when he retired?
You don't. He sold out.
He sold out to Joe Ronsonville. And then another uncle had a ranch west of the Billy Gerritsen place.
I had Charlie Smith. Billy Gerritsen. You knew him.
Oh, yes. Real good.
Yeah. It's on 8-track right now, and I'm going to try and get it copied off. Mrs. Meyer wants to hear it. And I told her I'd try and get it copied on